Hi, I'm Jürgen Strauss, and welcome to episode number 7 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, the podcast designed to help smart businesses with an interest in innovation and the Internet of Things to become even more innovative. In today's episode, we meet Paolo Bucchè from Occam, an Italian company that is building systems to link web resources with real things in the real world, and so make those things available to control from any device. We learn how Paolo has transitioned or is transitioning an academic development into a commercial application and all the challenges that he faces in doing so. There are some fantastic lessons in today's podcast. Paolo talks about innovation as a social process. He talks about sharing ideas, the need for getting feedback on your ideas, and the need for brainstorming with real people. He talks about the innovator's mindset, which he describes as serving real people with a real need, rather than innovating or developing new ideas simply for the purpose of having something new. So today's innovation tip is based around the idea of innovation as a social process. And the tip is, share your ideas. Share them with your network. Share them with your peers. Share them with your customers. Share them with your suppliers. Get feedback. Get critical feedback on those ideas. Because as Paolo points out, no one person is the repository of all good ideas. So share your ideas and look to get others to share their ideas with you. Give them feedback, get feedback on your ideas, learn from that feedback, and brainstorm together how these ideas might serve real needs or solve real problems. And in doing so, you will have a fantastic brainstorming system for innovation. Now, before we go ahead and meet Paolo, I'd like to just introduce today's competition, which is sponsored by InnovaBiz, where we help smart, innovative business owners who want to get more tangible results from the internet turn their online presence into a business generation machine that works even when they're not working. And the prize today is a copy of The Innovator's Dilemma by Clayton Christensen, which Clayton describes as a book that will change the way you do business. It's a fascinating read, so stick around for details on how you can enter the competition to win that prize later on in this interview. So now, let's go to the Innovation Hive and get the buzz from Paolo Bucchè.
This is the InnovaBuzz podcast, helping smart businesses be even more innovative.
Hi, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm very pleased to have with me today, all the way from Trento in Italy, Paolo Bucchè, who is the co-founder and president of Occam. Welcome, Paolo. It's a privilege to have you on the InnovaBuzz podcast.
Hi, Jürgen. It's very good to talk to you. I'm very pleased and very happy to share my experience with you.
Now, Paolo is also the Associate Professor of Computer Science at the University of Trento, and his interest is developing semantic technologies for driving innovative business solutions. Is that right?
It's right. That's my background. I, of course, come from academia. Knowledge representation and semantic technologies indeed are part of my academic DNA, and now we are trying to, you know, create value from this technology, not just papers.
Yeah, okay, that's great. So before we learn more about Paolo and about Occam, a quick competition announcement. So today I'm going to give away a copy of The Innovator's Dilemma by Clayton Christensen, which is a book that the author says will change the way that you do business. In the book, he talks about the risk of innovation, how to minimize the risk, and how to recognize opportunities that are worth pursuing. It's a fascinating read, so stick around for details on how you can enter the draw to win that competition prize later on in the interview. So, Paolo, before we learn about some of the innovative things you've been doing with Occam and some of your research, tell us a little bit about you as a person. So when you were a young child, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Well, I'm not really sure I had a clear idea I wanted to do when I was a child. What I can tell you is that for sure I was not expecting to become an entrepreneur at some point.
Okay.
Actually, my life was more or less created around the idea of becoming some kind of researcher. I always like to study. I really enjoy the academic world. So that's what I thought, you know, becoming a teacher, a researcher, maybe, you know, running some projects. And so I was not expecting to become an entrepreneur. There was a kind of surprise that happened very late in my life, which is maybe not very standard. It's maybe also because part of my family, nobody was an entrepreneur in my family. Yeah. My father was a doctor in the hospital. My mother was a school teacher. So it's been a big change, but it's very exciting.
Okay. And so you decided that computer science was the area that you were going to pursue that dream of research and teaching?
Well, you know, that's another part of the story. I started from classical studies in the high school, and then I have a master's degree in philosophy. So actually not a very technical area.
Yeah.
It's true that, you know, from the beginning, when I started my course in philosophy, I was attracted by areas like logics, knowledge representation, artificial intelligence. But there was a kind of slow change from humanities, from philosophy, from Kant, Hegel, Plato, Aristotle, to the big computer scientist. And then I realized that somehow computer science is applied philosophy, in a sense, and that's what I love about it. And I always seen computer science as a way to study representation and reasoning and intelligence, so I love it.
Yeah, that's right. I guess, yeah, Plato, Socrates, and so on, they were all about intelligence and thought and applied intelligence, right?
Well, yeah, I never thought my background in philosophy was a problem, an obstacle for me. I think there's so many great ideas there that can be reused. And even the name of the company, Occam, I will tell you later, is, of course, the result of my philosophical studies. But on the other hand, I had a very, I was very lucky because I had a chance to meet some of the great computer scientists of our era. For example, I spent 4 months at Stanford University in the 90s, where I met John McCarthy, one of the inventors of artificial intelligence. And that's really changed my life. But I think that the great computer scientists in depth are, in a sense, great philosophers as well.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I wondered about Occam, how that came about, because I noticed on your website that a lot of the other products and projects that you talk about are acronyms for something, and I couldn't work out what Occam would be an acronym for, so we'll look forward to learning about that one. What's the main goal behind Occam? Tell us how that came about.
Well, the main goal, I can describe it at two levels. One is kind of vision, and the other is the business level. The vision is somehow that we should try to organize our information, our services, what we deliver on the web, on the internet, more around the simple concept of entity rather than, you know, around machines, internet locations, servers, portals. This is all fine, but the easiest way for people to think about what they know is, well, I know something about, you know, people, about products, about location, about whatever events, and organizing stuff around the simple entities is much easier than thinking about schemas, tables, or XML, whatever. And so that's our vision. And we do it in two directions. And this is more now moving to business. One is we really work very hard with big data, and we try to reorganize this big data around entities, as I said, using semantic technologies, but using the concept of entity as a key. And so in this area, our main tool is what we call the entity name system, which is, of course, this is the dream. We should become some kind of phone book directory of things which are named on the web, assigning them a unique identifier, which people can use in their data, and using these identifiers as glue for data coming from different sources. This is one direction. And the other obvious way of thinking about entities is that, of course, entities are, most of them are in the physical world. And so being able to link digital content to things, objects out there is a second part of our dream. This is what we call Object Links, which is another platform we have, which uses proximity tags like QR codes. You see one here.
Yeah.
But also, you know, Bluetooth, NFC, RFID, it doesn't matter, no. Proximity tags to basically allow people to link stuff directly to object and use them, access them through mobile phones or tablets. And that's the second part of the business. But the vision is the same, is entities in the middle and then organizing things around them and not around abstract things like data structures or internet locations.
Yeah. Yeah, so by entities you mean physical objects or people or machines that do something, right?
Is any individual object. Could be a person for sure, could be a company, could be a specific location, could be a product, can be an event, like a big party, I don't know, or a concert.
Yeah.
Can be even can be a process, can be a machine for sure. Whatever, you know, basically has a name in natural language, okay? Mm-hmm. So, of course, we are entities, but also this room is an entity, and Australia is an abstract entity, if you want, is a, you know, is a country, and also the, I don't know, the elections of the American president is an entity. So this is what we use to glue stuff around them and make them available for applications, for customers. So just to be more concrete, one big application we have at the moment has to do with, we work with tax authorities in Italy. And, you know, the main problem with tax authorities is organize things around taxpayers to have a clear picture of what they have and what they do. And in case, ask them why they're not paying what they should pay. Okay, yeah. This is an example which is maybe not very popular, but from the technical point of view, is a fantastic example of organizing information around entities.
Yeah, yeah, that's great. Yeah. Okay, so, all right, well, tell us what Occam, how the name came about then.
Okay, so I this is an interesting story because Occam was a philosopher from the 14th century, 13th, 14th century.
So Occam's razor, right?
He's famous for a principle called the Occam's razor.
Yeah.
Some people who study philosophy maybe remember about this Occam razor.
Yeah.
And the idea of the Occam razor is that entities should not be multiplied beyond necessity.
Yeah.
That's the one popular way of explaining the Occam's razor. So when we started to work in the area of the web, the semantic web in particular, what we noticed is that one of the main reasons why the semantic web, the data on the semantic web were not coming together very quickly, very effectively, is that people basically mint new names for entities every time they publish data on the web. Okay, this is very typical. If you look at the semantic web and you find look for information about, I don't know, Jürgen, you will find, I don't know, hundreds of different URIs name Jürgen in a different way. And so there is a huge problem of connecting this information into a single, you know, global virtual graph, as, you know, Tim Berners-Lee would put it. And so we decided to apply another Occam's razor, which is not on the number of entities, but on the names of entities.
Okay,
say, okay, why don't we try to agree on a service which can just maintain a single name for an entity that everybody can access and use, and then everybody can attach their own data in their own internet location, but about the same thing, which is Jürgen as a person, Australia as a country, Occam as a company, whatever it is.
Hmm.
And so the idea was to cut entity names on the semantic web to make integration easier. That's the story of the name, and we are still working towards this objective, which is very ambitious, very difficult, because you know many people want to provide names for things, but I think we still have with the entity name system an idea which is very general, like the DNS on the web. The entity name system is called ENS, precisely to recall, you know, this idea of the DNS, because this is a very low-level service. It's, hey, here's a name, use it as you like, in your location, with your data, but use this string as a name, because that will help people to gather information around it.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And I like the analogy to, Occam's razor. The simplest solution is always the best, right? That's basically,
exactly. That's another way to express the Occam's razor.
Yeah.
Because, well, actually, they are connected, because the simple solution is a solution that assumes a smaller number of entities.
Hmm.
Okay, that was the connection between the entities and the simple solution.
That's,
I think it's a very good principle, actually, in life in general, not only in business.
Yeah. Yeah, so one of the areas that you mentioned in your research synopsis and on your own webpage, you talk about linking the web resources to things in of the real world. So this is really consistent with that, isn't it? So it sounds like it's an idea born out of your own research interests.
Well, yeah, I think it's an idea that at the same time is extremely simple, but on the other hand, is not natural for lots of people. So it takes a little bit, you know, and we are struggling a little bit to make people understand the idea. Because, well, the need, I think, is there. It's very simple. You know, people have developed a lot of web resources, videos, pictures, web pages, documents, services, for which are somehow connected to objects. Let me give you a very simple example where we are really working every day. And the example is public transportation companies, okay? Mm. And take a single bus stop, okay, in the middle of nowhere. Maybe not in the center of the city, in the middle of nowhere. There's plenty of information which is connected to this physical object, okay? Of course, is the bus schedule, is the geographical information where you are, is interesting things that are around the bus stop, is also public information about where you can find a supermarket or a drugstore or a hotel, a restaurant, whatever, is the physical position of the bus you're waiting in that moment. Maybe it's, I don't know, 500 meters from where you are. Maybe it's 500 kilometers because it's late for some reasons. Then there are special offers, there are fares, there are payment services. All this is already developed. And it would be very nice to have a very simple way to connect all these things without creating every time a new specific application, okay, to the object through a simple web address. You say, okay, this is the web address of the bus stop. You can simply link stuff to this web address and then make it available through, for example, a QR code. Hmm. This is, you know, the idea is very simple, but it can be applied in any domain, because my example can be used for a bottle of wine, for a package of Italian pasta, for a book, you know, about computer science, where you want to link many things to the book, to a tourist booklet, you know, a tourist offer from any tourist board. Can be, you know, just imagine on in the pharma industry, where they spend a lot of time creating those, you know, leaflets they put in the package of a drug, you know, to explain things that are not up to date after a few months. Yeah. You might want to link, you know, all these scenarios just require a simple infrastructure, a way to assign a web address, which we call an object link, to the object, and then linking through some easy kind of content management system, you know, very simple, any interesting resource, interesting in a contextual way, resource to the entity. And this is what we are trying to do. It's very simple, and so far, I think we have the only platform of this kind, you know, with all the general services. But the idea, for some reason, and this is a good question for us as an entrepreneurs, it's taking, you know, more time than we expected to be understood, and so, you know, we'll see.
Yeah. Now you talk about, I mean that's fascinating stuff, and particularly the examples you gave about documents that are out of date very quickly, or live data, which may be the bus. Where is the location, or how far away is the next bus for the bus stop? So that's where it becomes really powerful, because of live data that can be changed or updated dynamically, right?
Right. The key is exactly the word dynamically that you mentioned, because of course it is very natural, normal today to find, for example, QR codes out there with a link to some website or to some advertisement, you know, about something. But using the QR code or another proximity tag as a dynamic channel that you can program from your office, and you can change the resources you show, the services you publish, or the documents that you attach to the object. That's, you know, a different idea. It's really, you know, it's like having some monitors, displays in the environment, but the display is not there, it's in your telephone. Yeah. So you're using exactly, you know, the same idea of a display, but this time the display is in the user's pocket, and you have something, you know, very cheap, you know, put a QR code or an NFC tag or a Bluetooth tag, and people can use their telephone as a display that you can program from home. And I think this is very general, very powerful, and has a big potential, because where is the business idea here? The business idea is that when you have these dynamic displays out there in the world where people publish useful services, so people scan the code for the service, you can add advertisement there, third parties communication. And that, I think, is a completely new area, which is so far invisible to the big advertising, you know, companies, which we are trying to create. It's a new space, the space of object links, where we hope we'll be able to collect interest and then, of course, commercial advertisements.
Yeah, commercial application. Yeah, well, certainly in the area of advertising, I see there's huge potential there for that because, like you say, if there's a printed brochure that's out of date in 3 months or so on, there's a huge cost to reprint those. And you know, it may just be a simple change or an updated special or change in pricing or something. But, you know, cost of reprinting is...
Now, that's exactly the idea, you know, and I'm glad that you are expressing the idea better than I can do. Maybe that means that we can hire you to sell the idea to people. No, but the point is exactly what you said. In the future, the dream could be that instead of printing a brochure, you print a small, you know, business card and say, hey, this is our up-to-date brochure, scan it, and that's it. You know, you always have it up-to-date. And actually, some people are already doing that. And another way of expressing the same idea, because one objection is people say, well, but why don't you develop an application for this, for doing this, the typical, you know, mobile phone app. And the idea is, well, we are doing that, but instead of developing the application ad hoc every time, we say, okay, this is a general platform where you can link contents as if you had an application, but you don't, because this is on the web, but it looks like it is. And so the costs are reduced and is extremely more cost effective. You know, you have people who are not programmers who can change the links, add information, remove information, add services, you know, with a few clicks on a general purpose platform. I think that's the idea.
Yeah, that's great. And so with looking at the two approaches you have with the entity name system as one, so you talked about in some of the publications, you talked about making that freely available. So are you thinking of developing a standard there that would be kind of universally applied then at some point in the future?
Well, the idea of the entity name system comes from a European project called Occam, not Big Fantasy, which is somehow the father or the mother, of this company. And so as part of the legacy of the project, there is a public entity name system which people can use on the web at api.occam.org. Unfortunately, the documentation is not very good, and this is typical in publicly funded projects, that when the project is over, people don't spend time to write documentation on the thing. But the system is available, and we still have several thousands of requests every day, so some people are using the platform for names. What we are trying to do as a company, this is our commitment with the former partners of the project, is to maintain this platform public, open, free. Everybody can register in the platform and add new entities, create new identifiers for their own objects, so it's open. And that will stay like that, open and free and accessible to people. The challenge for the company is to take the same idea and take it into enterprise applications, where you don't want to have enterprise information to be published, not even the entities, the list of entities published on the web for your competitors. So what we are doing as a company is take this idea, put it in the, you know, in big enterprise solutions, and use it to make sure that their systems can talk to each other in a very effective way. So, but the public ENS is there, api.occam.org, and people can play with it whenever they want. We are still developing it.
Okay, that's great. Yeah, so for all the developers out there, we'll have a link underneath the video transcript for you to take a look at. Yeah, and hope, and maybe people can actually contribute to the documentation and upgrading it.
Yeah. That's great. It's open source, so people can even contribute with code if they want.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. All right. Well, that's fantastic. So in terms of what you do, Paolo, when you meet somebody for the first time and somebody says to you, what do you actually do? How do you describe what you do in one sentence?
That's interesting because we are working on identity in Occam, identity and identifiers, but yeah. I have an identity crisis these days because, as I said, for more than 20 years, I thought about myself as a university professor. So yeah. That was easy. Yeah. What do? I teach at the university. Good. But then, you know, this Occam thing has become bigger and bigger, you know, in the last 4 years. And now, very often, I find myself introducing myself as, well, I'm the founder of Occam. Hmm. Okay. And by the way, I teach at the university,
yeah.
Which is not a fair description because university is still paying my salary. So
okay, yeah.
that's one of the issues here. And I have a third identity because what I do as part of my university work, in the last 10 years, I've been pro-rector for sport development in my university,
okay.
Which was another thing. We started very small, very small, and now it's become huge. Just to give you an idea, at the end of 2013, we have organized the Winter Olympic Games of universities here in Trentino, and I was the vice president of the organizing committee, you know, a huge work. And now I'm part of a European expert group on the economic dimension of sport. So I really don't know. I'm a guy with many interests,
yeah.
Hopefully not too many. The only common thing is I really try to do my best in whatever I do. So if I start to do something, I'm really trying to grow this something to something excellent, something big, something good. I try. I not always succeed, I must say.
Yeah.
And so for one thing is my life is not boring, for sure.
Hmm. Okay. Well, there's certainly a thread, I think, that goes through there, and that's the innovation thread, which is, of course, consistent with the theme of our podcast here. And that's because I noticed one of your websites talked about driving innovation in sport, and that's obviously where your interest in sports administration and so on comes from.
Yeah, exactly. I think now, as part of the organizing of this winter Universia last year, I started to think about sport not just as physical activity, which of course is very important. For people to stay fit, but also as a very powerful inspiration for research projects in areas which are different from sport itself. Okay. And so we had a conference about that, and we had a very big success. Lots of people from different research areas coming together and say, oh, I have ideas on materials, on ICT applications, on psychological theories, on social theories, or whatever. Mm. And so that was interesting. And even for Occam, I must say that we also have a small fitness branch. We have a project called Fit City, where we are trying to use the idea of physical locations in the environment as opportunities for people to exercise. And so we are developing with a mixture of QR codes and semantic technologies, something for Trento first and then for smart cities in general, where people can scan a code and know what opportunities they have in their normal daily life to exercise a little bit, like, you know, walking the stairs or using a bench in the park for some exercise, showing videos, maybe showing famous sportmen or sportwomen who show how to exercise there. Mm. So I'm trying to connect my interests into a single picture where entities are, you know, still the center. And just so resolve my identity crisis into a single, you know, line of activity.
Yeah, that's great. So innovation is clearly the theme here, but yeah, you're looking to connect all your interests through that.
Yeah. Well, I think innovation is a very nice concept. In the past, I used to confuse innovation with research in the sense of developing new ideas. Mm. But I think, you know, innovation is one step beyond, because new ideas are somehow the precondition for innovation. But then understanding how these new ideas can solve real problems for real people is a different mindset. And I think this is a main mindset for innovators, looking around, identifying potential problems or needs, and then say, oh, I have the idea which can solve this problem better than other people are trying to do, or in a new way, or I'm the only one with a solution, and provide the solution. And this is a very important mindset for innovators, I think.
Yeah. Well, that's That little tidbit of advice is worth the price of admission alone, and since it's free, it's probably good. But innovation is about identifying problems and then finding a solution to real problems. That's I really like that. It's great.
Well, because, coming from computer science in the academia, very often I find many colleagues with wonderful ideas, and then they fake up problems. Say, oh, I do this because there is a problem of doing this and this and that. And then you ask people out there, do you have this problem? No. So, when you fake a problem, then your solution is not likely to be adopted. That's the problem. It's not done in bad faith. It's just that there's no real attention to the real problems of real people. And this is very important for success as well, not only for innovation, but for success.
Of course, that's the risk of academia in general, isn't it? That there's a little bit of a disconnect between the real world and real problems and some of the fantastic work that they're actually doing.
I think the academia can provide opportunities. I think it's a good thing that academia has the freedom to experiment with ideas
That's
that are
right,
not
yeah.
necessarily
Not
useful
restricted.
immediately. But then somebody else must look at the ideas and make the bridge. And this is, I think, the role of innovators, the main role of innovators, I think.
That's great, yeah. So, in terms of your involvement with Ockham, what do you spend your time doing day to day?
Well, I love to say that every minute of my life is very exciting here, but of course, it's not always like that. This is a small company. We now have 10 employees, which is no still a good result. We started with 1.5 4 years ago, so that's okay. But there is still a lot of practical things to do. In the last months, for example, one big, well, a large fraction of my time has been devoted to solve cash flow problems, which is a typical thing with startups. Not very exciting, but definitely something you have to do if you want to survive.
Absolutely.
And this is not exactly the best moment in Europe and in Italy in particular to start a business. The crisis is still here, and that's why we are, of course, expanding our business outside Italy and hopefully outside Europe. We have some contacts with the North America and the US. So this is part of the, my daily life. But on the other hand, I still have time to think about, how to develop our business, which is exciting, talking to people from other companies or for potential customers, refining the ideas we have. Because one of the problems I have understood in my experience is that an idea which can be very clear to you doesn't have to be. Well, it's not necessarily very clear to other people. You need to really fill a gap between where you are when you think for years and hours every day about something, and people who have never thought about it. They have their own business and own issues and problems and daily work, and it takes a lot of time to explain things that look obvious to you. And this is something which is frustrating at the beginning, but then you understand that this is absolutely necessary if you have something new. Because if you sell a car, there's no problem to explain. People know what the car is, and maybe they like it or they don't like it, or maybe it's too expensive or is okay. But when you have something which is new, it doesn't have to be rocket science, but it's different from what people use every day.
That's right, yeah.
It takes time to fill this gap. And this is, again, now I think it's exciting because when you make sure that when you succeed in explaining what you do to people who are outside your business, I think that's an important step and gives more understanding of what you do to yourself. And so this is another important part of what I do in my daily life.
Yeah. So that's the educator coming out in you as well.
Well, it's really a long process, and I think this is a problem shared with many other startups or innovative businesses, that making sure people understand what you do is not simple. And sometimes you think that an explanation is good, but it's not. And you
That's
can
right, yeah.
immediately understand that only if you talk to many people, you try it, and you see the reactions, and then you learn, and then you go back, you do your homework, and try to explain it again and again and again. And I think that in the end, you refine your message, and that's the most important part for selling some innovative product.
That's right. Yeah, it's One of the recent podcast interviews I did was with Glenn Finkel of Purity. I don't know if you know that company. And he made this point very strongly that, you know, a disruptive technology requires a lot of educating of, you know, the potential clients in terms of how it works, what it actually does, what the benefits are, and why it actually solves the problems that it solves. So, and why it's different. So that's a really key point. Yeah.
Well, and in my case, I must say that my academic background is not helping me very much because, you know, and I had to learn a lot. And by the way, another message is all this adventure with Occam is really teaching me a lot. And I'm very grateful that I had the opportunity to go through this learning process, because sometimes you think that to be innovative, you really must be beyond the edge, you know, very, very far away from, but it's not true. Actually, innovation happens in small steps in the real world.
Yeah.
And being too far away is not a good position. You can have a very long-term vision, this is fine, but then you must solve the problem, the real problems, step by step, making sure that people understand the path from where they are to where you want to take them.
Yeah.
And this is extremely important. And so, you know, even a word like entity, okay? We started from entities. This is something that I try not to use, you know, when I talk to customers, because I think an entity is obvious. You know, an entity is whatever, you know, we're talking about, but it's not like that. So speaking about, you know, things, objects, or the concrete examples, the bus stop, the brochure, the booklet, the, you know, the bottle of wine, no, that's how people understand it. And
that's
then
right,
from
yeah.
there, you can build a long-term relationship and take them to, you know, to wherever you want to take them.
Mm. Exactly, yeah. So steer clear of the lingo and or the techno-speak and make sure you can explain it clearly to people in concrete terms that they can understand. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's not easy, I must say, because we are all geeks in one way or another.
That's right.
More or less.
Yeah.
And so for people out there, you know, there's no things like, you know, the Internet of Things directly, or there's no interlocation, IP addresses, QR codes, not like that. You know, they have a problem. I need to reach this customer. I want to improve my visibility, or I need to sell this service into people with mobile phones. Well, this is what, you know, this is what the language they speak, and
that's
we should speak the same language to establish communication, and then build up from this common core the rest of the message, which is, as I said, it requires many trials and failures, and we're slowly, you know, getting there, hopefully.
Yeah, well, one of the great things about being an entrepreneur, as you said, is that you certainly, it is a learning experience. You're always learning something new every day. That's certainly been my experience as well, and continues to be. So do you worry about something? Or is there something that keeps you awake at night?
Well, there are a few things which in the last 4 years kept me awake at night, but of different nature. One thing is, I must say, switching from the university, from the lab to a company, also changes the personal relationship with people. Mm-hmm. That's something that, I mean, not with the same people. What I mean is a different context. A company is not a university lab.
Yeah.
So people working for a company have different expectations. They have a different way of reasoning about things. They have different priorities. It's not like a PhD student where the priority is I need to publish. No, these people need to be happy. You know, this work is an important part of their life. They expect to have some salaries, to have a role in the company. They expect you to make decisions in a kind of effective way very quickly. So all these things at the beginning of the company have created some issues. And I had, unfortunately, some problems with the people working with us, which I had to solve. And it was very painful at the personal level. That's one part of the reasons why I lost part of my nights. Okay. But the other part, which is probably more exciting, is that sometimes I wake up at night and I have an idea on what we could do with our technologies or how we could sell the message in a better way or to a new industry or to a new customer. And then when this process starts in my mind, I really have troubles to fall asleep again. Yeah. So I wake up and I write it down.
Yeah.
Which is okay for for that. But then it would be good to have time to sleep in the morning to compensate the time I didn't sleep. But I can't because I have a very nice family which I love very much, and my life schedule is definitely influenced a lot by the family. So that means at 6:30 I must get up anyway in the morning, no matter what I did in the night.
Okay.
And this is okay. But I love this part of the job. When you have a new idea, it's so exciting that who cares about sleeping?
It is, isn't it? Yeah. And it's fascinating. I have the same problem. I think of some idea in the middle of the night and there's no way I can get back to sleep. And I try to write it down. But what happens if I write it down, that kind of generates more ideas.
There is another experience, which is when you start writing down is an interesting exercise because some people think that writing down is just putting on paper what you have already thought, but that's not true. When you write down, writing is part of the creative process. And so, as you said, you write down something, then you don't like it exactly as it is, and then you change it, and then you connect it to other things. And the writing process is really, at least in my experience, part of the creative process. You end up with something which is much bigger, much better, or anyway more complex than it was at the beginning, just because you made the effort of starting to write down the idea. This was true for academic papers. It's always been in my experience, and is now true for business ideas. It's always the same. Writing is a very important mental process, I think.
Yeah, that's right. So, so you mentioned family. So, what are the things you do to keep balanced? And when you're not working, what do you get up to?
Okay, well, one premise is that I don't really see this kind of separation between my work and my family, which means of course there is a separation, but unlike other people, which I think are really unlucky in this respect, I don't see work as the bad time you have to have for a salary, because then you can do whatever you like. I really love what I do, and so the problem is, as you said, is to find the balance between these two passions, my work and my family. So what I do is, on the one hand, I try to save as much as possible my weekends for the family. That's not always possible, but at least I try to do my work in a kind of hidden way. When they are doing something else, I hide somewhere and try to do something. And I also try to limit my access to the internet, because that's crazy. If I start reading email or browsing the web, I never stop. On the other hand, I'm lucky. I live in a wonderful region. It's a wonderful nature in the mountains, close to the Dolomites, beautiful lakes, good weather. So it's easy to do some, physical activities, in the nature, skiing in the winter, hiking in the summer, swimming in the lakes. Yeah. So I guess, it's not very different from Australia. Where, of course, you don't have the Dolomites, but you have wonderful beaches.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
Plenty of things to do, outdoor. Yeah. So that's part of the thing. But I also try to give this message to my kids. Look, it's not that I do my work because, it's something, it's a kind of necessity, something, boring or tiring or whatever. It's part of life, and I really invite them to find, they are still young, they are 10 and 12. But if I can, I try to pass this message that what they should try to do is follow their passions and find a job which, is part of their life, which doesn't mean that it's 100% of your life, but, it's a pleasure to do it. And you have to balance different pleasures, life and work. And that's, I think, one of the most lucky situations that you can have in life, to be honest.
Mm. Yeah, that's great, isn't it? If you love what you do, it's not work. It's not a chore anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
That's great, yeah. So, so have you read any interesting books recently that you could recommend to our audience?
Well, when I am at home, I read a lot of not technical books. So, but I don't think this is interesting at the moment for the audience. What I read recently was a very nice book called On Intelligence. I will tell you in a minute the author. I have a small lapsus in my memory, where the author was trying to combine some kind of neural approach to symbolic approach to represent information and knowledge, which I thought was very exciting because I always thought that there was a gap between all this kind of neural sub-symbolic, you know, approach to representing information and knowledge mm-hmm. and the declarative approach, you know, the knowledge representation approach, logics and axioms and okay. formal rules. And I think, you know, understanding the brain, how the brain combines these two things is extremely exciting. And I really love the book. And maybe I will send you the information so you can put it somewhere.
Okay. Yeah. If you do that, we'll put a link. We'll put a link to it. Yeah.
And then I read more than books, several papers. I'm really trying to follow what's going on in the area of the semantic web, which is my, as I said, my first love in this area. By the way, in a few weeks, we will have here in Trentino the International Semantic Web Conference, which will be a great opportunity to stay up to date with what's going on in research in this area. And then I also try to read marketing papers in the domains where of interest for us, for Occam, in particular in this area of the mobile services, mobile advertising. Mm-hmm. I cannot recommend a single thing at the moment, but I think reading and staying up to date with what other people think and what's going on is a critical part of business. So read a lot.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Okay. And if you had a magic wand that you could wave and fix one thing within your business in Occam, what would that be?
Well, I have this idea since, when I started the Occam project, that my team and myself, first of all, myself, we are not very good in communicating what we do. This is, I suffer for this because I know that we have within our company a lot of great things, and I see other people, other companies that maybe are doing something which is not as good as this, but which are extremely good in communicating what they do. And I'm not complaining. I'm not complaining with them. I really complain with ourselves. We don't invest enough. Maybe we are not good enough in communicating what we do in some exciting way that people really say, oh, that's great. That's what I want to use. And so we are still too much technically oriented. Inside, I see a lot of excitement. And our developers come to my office very often. Oh, we've done this. I'm fantastic. We are faster than anybody else. This is okay. But this is not enough. This is good for the lab, for the developers there. But it's not good for the rest of the world. So, yeah, I would like to fix our communication skills and making sure that we at least are able to explain exactly what we do to people. And I'm sure that would lead to have people excited about what we do, because we have a lot of good things in our safe here, but that is of no use if you keep it for yourself. So we must definitely improve our communication skills. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So communication around marketing, definitely. I guess. Yeah.
Marketing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Great. And what do you see as the risk of innovation within a company?
Well, there are, several risks. The most obvious risk is, like for any innovative company, that what you do is innovative, but actually is not what people need. So, you think it's a good idea. You think it's a breakthrough, whatever, but it isn't. And it happens. You must be very honest to yourself and admit that after some time, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. It can be because you came too early. That's, the positive explanation. It can be because simply you were wrong, which of course is always a possibility when you try to open a new path. This is one risk. The second risk, as I said before, speaking about marketing and communication, is that somehow you are not able to wrap what you do into a package which is interesting for people outside. So maybe you have a good idea, but you have the wrong packaging, and so somebody else will understand your idea better than you do and will sell it before you can do it. That's the other risk which I see. The third thing is that In my team, I have several people coming from some research experience. Not all of them, but some of them had got their PhDs. And the risk is that instead of consolidating what we have, they always, think of going forward, which is good, thinking for the future, but you never consolidate what you have. So if you always move to the next thing because it's exciting, because it's new, because it's, fantastic, you lose contact. On the other hand, as we were discussing before, with real customers, because you must make sure that your first step is done, is solid, can be solved, and then you can move to the next one and prepare the next wave of things. And so I see that we run a lot, we follow new technologies, we make new experiments, we do a lot of things, but on the other hand, we forget that customers need that we fix bugs, that we have some tiny improvement on what they have, and the usual stuff. So I think this is another risk when you have a highly innovative environment in the company, and you don't have enough focus on consolidation, not only consolidation. Exploration.
Hmm. Yeah, I think one of the big challenges for any entrepreneur is the shiny object syndrome, right? Something new and it gets exciting.
Yeah,
gets it more attention than like you say, fixing or consolidating.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'd like to go into our buzz round, which is our innovation round, where I ask you five or six questions, and hopefully we'll get a very short, sharp answer from you that's going to blow away the audience with its insight and its brilliance. So we'll start off with what do you think is the number one thing anyone needs to be more innovative?
I think the number one thing is to find your own way. Don't follow recipes that work for somebody else. Learn from the experience from other people, but find your own way and exploit your strengths and the opportunities in your environment. Learn from the others, but don't try to copy recipes that work for somebody else.
I love it. That's great advice. Yeah. What about the best thing you've done to develop new ideas or new products?
I think the best idea, as I said before, is look around for real problems of real people and try to solve them in a new way.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you will fail.
Hmm. So look for a real need. Yeah. Okay. What about, do you have a favorite tool or system that you develop new innovations with?
Here, I'm afraid I will somehow show my age. I still think that having a few hours of brainstorming with the intelligent people in the company or with other companies, and then try to write down the outcome of this brainstorming is still the best tool. I'm not a big fan of innovation tools, which can be useful tools, but I cannot see them to replace the face-to-face interaction in, maybe at night in a very, heated brainstorming on new ideas with intelligent and bright people.
Yeah. So a lot of different people contributing thoughts and ideas.
Well, yes, innovation is a social process. I don't see, a single person having 100% of the good idea to do something really new. You need to share with other people, to compare with other people, being criticized, accept criticism from other people and learn from them and improve and, listen to everyone. You never know, from the old experienced entrepreneur to the, fresh student at university, you can find a good idea anywhere. So you must be very careful. Listen a lot.
Yeah, great. That's great advice. So what do you think is the best way to keep a project on track?
Well, I think the best way is to put yourself in the customer's shoes and try to understand what the customer or the funder would like you to do. Because if you take the other perspective, and then you do what you would like to be done to you, if you were the customer, is the best way to, succeed and make the customers happy. So put yourself in your customer's shoes and do the best that you would like to receive as a customer.
Yeah, that's great advice. I love it, yeah. So play the customer and treat yourself well.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And do a little bit more than is expected from you, okay? Yeah. Just a little bit. You cannot do always wonderful things. But if you do something which is a little bit more than is in the contract or is expected from you, that will keep the excitement very high and the interest. And also the positive feeling, the positive relationship, which is another thing. Establishing positive relationships and showing that, in a sense, we are partners, not just customer provider. We are partners. We're doing something exciting together. I'm trying to do something new, so I need you to use my technologies, and you need me because I'm solving a problem that you have. So that's a very nice partnership.
Yeah, that's great. Really like it. So what do you think is the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
I'm afraid I must go back to my first advice, which is try to be yourself. Very often, you know, I have people saying, well, you see, look at what the, you know, this other person is doing, this other entrepreneur, this other company. But even in communication, you know, for example, I was wondering this morning, what should I do? I should wear a tie, I should have a jacket, or I should go with the Oka. I said, I will just dress as I feel like. That's it. I mean, that's me. Okay. Yeah. So you like it? Okay. If I fake somebody else, it's not going to work.
It's amazing how many people actually say that when I ask that question. It's probably the most common answer, but people express it in many different ways. So that's really, really good advice. All right. So what?
That's my experience, at least. Yeah. I'm sure there is a much more intelligent answer, but I think that's the best I can come up with.
Oh, I think that's a great answer, really. So what do you see as the future for Occam?
Well, I really hope that in the future, Occam will grow to become, you know, a mid-sized company, not a huge company, and you know, that will deliver services for people worldwide, so that our services become part of the daily life of millions of people. In a sense, what happens, but on a smaller scale, with I don't know, Facebook, Twitter, or whatever, something that is normal for people to use. Okay. And it's part of life. It's not just you know, something specific you do in your work. Sometimes people told me, "Well, do you have an exit strategy? You want to sell the company?" You know, I'm a bit romantic about that. You know, I feel like Occam is like my baby, and I'm not a serial entrepreneur. My goal is not to go from one company to the next to make money out of them. My goal is really to really grow this idea, the seed of the idea, and make it, you know, bigger and bigger, and you know, do something exciting for people who, you know, use our tools, and for people who work in the company. So hopefully it's going to be that we grow, we reach a mid-size level, 150 to 200 people, and then, you know, we deliver things that people love. That's my dream.
Okay, that's a pretty bold ambition all the same.
I know.
Yeah. So, no, that's been great, Paolo. Thanks for that. Now, just a reminder for our listeners about the competition. So I'm giving away a copy of The Innovator's Dilemma by Clayton Christensen. It talks a lot about risks of innovation and some of the themes of this podcast. And the author says that it's going to change the way that you will do business. Now, to enter this competition, what we'd like you to do is leave a comment under the video and tell us what is the most innovative way that you've seen dynamic data being presented, that you've found, and tell us how either you're using the tool or how somebody else is using the tool in the public domain, and what benefit that is bringing to the particular application. Leave a comment under this video, and I'll ask Paolo to come by in a couple of weeks and award a prize from the entrance. Is that okay, Paolo?
Yeah, sure. I'd be very happy.
Yeah, that's great. So in conclusion then, what's the number one piece of advice you'd give any business that wants to be a leader in innovation and productivity?
You know what? The best answer is, I don't know. First, I want to become, you know, very successful and leading the way in the business, and then I will give you the advice. Otherwise, it would be just, you know, it would not be myself. I'm really sorry to disappoint people here.
Well, that's a great answer, because we're all learning as we go, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Watch this space, thanks again, Paolo. Now, where can people reach out to say thank you for all for your time and all the insights you've shared with us today?
Sorry, I didn't understand the question. Sorry.
Where can people reach out to say thank you for all your insights today?
Well, they can find me, of course, on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, whatever. But probably the best way for me, again, my generation, it would be drop me an email, and I would be happy to start interaction with people who are interested in what we do.
Okay, and I'll put links to all of those places underneath the video as well. So finally, I'd like to ask you, who would you like to see me interview on the podcast in future? And why?
Well, I met several innovative people in these years. I think an interesting place where innovation is happening in Europe, in the area where I work, is in Ireland. Maybe you know this Digital Research Institute in Galway, Derry. So somebody from the institute there could give you an insight on what's going on in that area. Maybe, if you want names, I can suggest a friend of mine, Giovanni Tumarello. He's done many innovative things in the on the web of data, and he's a very peculiar person. You will love it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Giovanni, look out. I'll be in contact with you for a future InnovaBuzz podcast. That's great.
Okay.
Well, thanks very much, Paolo. It's been really terrific. You've been very generous with your time today, and I wish you all the best with Occam and with all your research as well, of course. I look forward to seeing what transpires over the next period, and seeing some of those innovative QR codes or the entities, as you call them, being connected through your tools and that. So thanks very much, Paolo.
No, thank you, Jürgen, for this opportunity, because as usual, thinking about this interview allowed me to understand better things that we do. So it's been, even this interview has been a learning, part of the learning process. So thank you very much.
Okay, thanks. Bye for now. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, I hope you enjoyed meeting Paolo as much as I enjoyed interviewing him on today's InnovaBuzz podcast. He certainly is very passionate about all the things he does, and he's managing to balance an academic career together with being an entrepreneur in a startup company. Now, Occam have taken what looks like a really simple idea, but turned that into reality by using innovative systems and structure. And the important thing is that, as Paolo points out, it translates into something that is of benefit to the public. So there are some great tips in that interview, some real nuggets of gold. The first thing that struck me was about having a focus on real problems and real people. So don't just innovate for the sake of innovation, but really focus on solving a real problem for a real person. The second one was around innovation being a social process, and that's part of the reason why we have these comments on our podcast, or we have these competitions on our podcast where we try to elicit comments from our audience, because innovation is a social process and we need to share our ideas and get feedback on them. And the third one was the idea of putting yourself in your customer's shoes and then treat yourself the way you want to be treated. So that in itself is a little nugget of gold. Now remember, you can subscribe to this podcast, the InnovaBuzz podcast, on iTunes or on Stitcher, so that you'll never miss a future episode. All the show notes for this episode are going to be on innovabiz.com.au/Occam. That's OKKAM, all lowercase, no hyphens, dashes, or underscores, or any of that funny business. So innovabiz.com.au/Occam. We'll have all the show notes, the resources, the links to contact Paolo, and the other little bits and pieces that he mentioned on the podcast interview. Now, remember, leave a comment underneath the video to go into the draw to win a copy of The Innovator's Dilemma by Clayton Christensen. So what we'd like you to do is share with us the most innovative way you've seen dynamic data presented, whether that's in the form of QR codes or through a Bluetooth connection or through an NFC connection. Share with us how either you're using that or how you've seen other people using that and what benefit that is providing to the public. And I'll get Paolo to swing by in a couple of weeks and pick the best entry in his view for receiving the prize of the Innovator's Dilemma. Now, Paolo nominated Giovanni Tumorello from the Digital Enterprise Research Institute in Galway, Ireland, to be on a future InnovaBuzz podcast. So, Giovanni, look out in your inbox. I'm coming to get you, and I will send you an invite for a future InnovaBuzz podcast. Now, if you like these podcasts, I would love it if you give us a 5-star review over on iTunes, because that really helps us to build our audience. And it's my aim to share this information with as many people as possible, because we have some fantastic guests on this interview, like Paolo today, who share their time and their insights and their knowledge with us freely. And I want to make that available to as many people as possible. So, in conclusion, remember, if you don't innovate, you stagnate. So think big, be adventurous, and innovate on.